Welcome, Bouncer Backers, to this week's episode of Bouncing Back Stronger, the podcast where we explore the incredible power of resilience, personal growth, and triumph over adversity. I'm your host, Sarah Jane Vasquez, and I'm thrilled to embark on this transformative journey with you. Whether you're seeking inspiration, guidance, or simply a reminder that you're not alone on your journey, Bouncing Back Stronger is here to support and empower you. We believe that every setback is an opportunity for a comeback, and every challenge is a chance for growth. Let's go. Welcome to Bouncing Back Stronger. Now, our episode today is with Anya Leenan. Anya is joining us from a very hot Sydney, I believe. Anya, welcome to today's episode.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me today. And yes, it is very hot in Sydney today, unseasonably warm.
So. Because you are coming into your summer, aren't you? But perhaps you shouldn't be experiencing a heat wave just yet.
No, not yet. A week ago, we were still wearing jackets and wrapped up, and now we're melting. So
tell me about it.
Sooner than expected.
You are quite aware of the weather here in the UK. So, yeah. Four seasons in one day and all of that. So, Anya, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. So I call myself a menopause champion because I'm all about championing, talking about menopause, educating women in particular, but men as well. It's just really getting that conversation started because I really believe that when we know better, we can do better for ourselves and for others. And aside from that, I am also a personal trainer of some 17 years. And the two tie in quite nicely because exercise plays such an important role throughout our lives, but particularly when we start to get to menopause, just in terms of maintaining our, you know, brain health, muscle mass, bone density, all those kinds of things. So as a menopause champion, I work with women one-on-one, coaching them, but also with workplaces, starting to bring education into the workplace to help women there as well.
Yeah, brilliant. So we're going to explore all of those in today's episode because, you know, you just said there about knowledge is key, and it is, isn't it? You know, knowledge is your power. I do feel that the information is starting to get more and more out there, but there's still an awful lot of confusion, you know, around it. And the statistics are still quite worrying, particularly with women and the workplace and women leaving their roles due to, you know, the menopause symptoms and how they're just struggling. And perhaps, you know, that invisibility. But also, let's go back to the exercise because, yes, it is important, but maybe in later life, we tend to, I don't know, fall off the wagon a little bit, I guess. Do you see that?
Yeah, oh, very much so. It's such a busy time of life for many women because, you know, there's work. We've often got young children that we're still caring for in some capacity or needing to be there for teenagers. Many women are trying to help parents as well that are aging and managing that. There's, you know, you're trying to keep a relationship alive. You're trying to work. You're trying to see friends. And yeah, a few things have to sort of fall by the wayside. And unfortunately, exercise is often one of them. And women often sort of go, you know, they've either haven't exercised for a while, so it's a bit daunting to start again, or they just feel like they don't like exercise. They haven't found something they enjoy. So yeah, it's often one of the first things that sort of falls by the wayside. It's, I don't know, maybe it's seen as a bit an indulgent to make the time to exercise, whereas it would actually quite often help, you know, from your mood to your energy levels, to your sleep. So many things are helped with exercise, but yeah.
I did read something the other day. And they said, this chap said how exercise is the most underrated antidepressant.
Oh, yeah.
And that hit home.
I mean,
with
my tagline when I email people, I always say, you're one workout away from a good mood. And generally, that's true, you know.
And I think if we can, when we start out a workout, you know, perhaps we don't feel like it. You know, I try and exercise early in the morning, and the many mornings when I don't feel like it, I'd rather just stay in bed for an extra half an hour and have that coffee. What I try to do is think, what's my end result and how would I feel? And I know that after, you know, whatever it is I'm doing, I know I'm going to feel energized, halo choking me, but, you know, feeling good.
Yeah.
It's a balance of like, feeling, you know, looking at that end result.
Yeah, that's so true. And yeah, remembering how good you feel afterwards. And you know, generally within 5 or 10 minutes of starting exercising, you're generally into it then, and you know, you can keep going. It's getting over that, I think, that starting point. That's often the hurdle that we have to get over. And then once you get started, you know, you're into it and you're feeling good. So
if there's a lady out there and she's thinking, yeah, I know I need to exercise, I haven't exercised in a long time, I don't know where to start, what would you suggest?
Start small. Start with, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. If you can find someone that you want to go for a walk with, that's brilliant. If you can find an exercise group, if that's something that you enjoy or you think you might enjoy, because exercising with people is so much more enjoyable. But yeah, many women will go, oh, I'm too unfit, or they feel embarrassed. And I often say, you know, nobody's looking at you. Everyone feels like everyone's watching them, but actually nobody's really watching anyone else. So that's one of the first things. But yeah, just start small. So if you start at home, put on some music, start dancing, you know, just get the heart rate going, do something fun. And then as you start to build your confidence in your ability to move, then you can maybe start going out and joining a group and finding some like-minded individuals. That's the main thing, is find something you enjoy, because then you're more likely. Because the thing is, like you say, it's hard to get up in the mornings. And I love exercise, and I have days where I really don't feel like doing it, because motivation's a bit fickle. Motivation gets us to that first session, but thereafter it'll often fall by the wayside. And it's really commitment that sees the changes happening. It's that commitment to, no, I said I was going to do this, you know, 3 times a week or whatever it is. So just quieting that little voice in your head and just get up and going.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there, isn't there? So starting off small, finding something that you like, you know, just because you attend one class, it doesn't mean that you have to go to them all. In the beginning, you're looking at what's going to suit you and fit around your lifestyle. Also, you know, the idea that if you can find somebody who will buddy up with you, they can act as a motivation. I know when I've buddied up with people in the past, if you're thinking about not turning up, you know that you're letting that person down.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's motivation in itself.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And, you know, social connection is so important as well, just to have someone to talk to. It's, that has a whole range of benefits as well. So you're ticking, you know, both boxes there, moving and preferably outside as well. If you can get out into the fresh air, that's even better. But having that social connection is important.
What about your energy levels, Anya? Because I know I'm in perimenopause. I'm 44 years old. I do feel that my energy levels are not the same as what they once were. I used to bounce out of bed in the mornings. Literally, there was more days of bouncing out than not. And now I feel like sometimes it's harder, even though I'm getting rest, even though I do sleep fairly okay. What do we do about these energy levels?
Oh my goodness, there are so many things that can affect energy levels, and starting from the quantity of your sleep. So you might feel like you're getting a good, you know, 7 or 8 hours sleep a night, but what's that quality of sleep like? You know, if we're looking at our phones late at night, even if we think we're sleeping well, that blue light really does affect the quality of sleep.
Guilt.
You know, how much caffeine? Oh, so many of us.
Yeah. Even though I say don't and read some of your book. Yeah. It, you know, and I know the people said, well, put it away from your bed, and I've tried that, but the alarm in the morning
the blue light is really tricky, and that goes for all screens. So, you know, the recommendation is to step away from your screen an hour before you go to bed. So that's, you know, preferably TV, an e-reader, your phone, your laptop, whatever it is. And just having a bit of an evening routine can help as well. Like we do with little children, you know, when they're babies, we do, I don't know, bath and then a story and then bedtime. And setting a routine for yourself can really help as well. That really triggers that, right, it's time to go to sleep, and having that regular, you know, sleep and wake up time.
I think as well in that, so for me, I do try to, well, have a routine, but I know I've got to build on my consistency. You know, I think that's important.
Key. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
having that, okay, yeah. you're going to do your 10 minutes of meditation, you're going to read a chapter of your book, you're going to do your 5 minutes of your journaling, and you're going to read, relax, yeah. whatever. Doesn't always look like that. So I know for me personally, that's what I've got to work on.
Yeah, yeah. And the journaling's a good one as well, because then often you can actually do a bit of a brain dump of what happened during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and write down what you need to do the next day, because then your brain can actually relax and go, okay, I don't have to keep thinking. I don't know if it ever happens to you that if you've got something on the next day that's not in your normal routine. I know I'll often wake up and sort of think about what time do I need to leave and how am I going to get there and what's the traffic going to be like? But if you can write that down beforehand and work it all out, your brain can actually go, that's okay. She's got it sorted. It's written down, you know.
I do that now, and you're actually, I didn't used to, and I did used to wake up panicking. And then my therapist actually told me, put a notebook by your bed. So if you think of anything that needs to be done tomorrow, you can write it in, and then you know it's going to be done, because you'll look at that first thing in the morning. I, in the past, have jumped out of bed, come to my diary, or, you know, sitting there thinking, pick my phone up to have a look. So I think that's a really good idea to have that, you know, appointment book, worry book. I've heard it called all kinds.
Yeah, that's true. So just something to write it down. Yeah, it's good. But I mean, yeah, going back to your energy. So, I mean, that's just your food can affect your energy levels. So, you know, depending on what you're eating, how much caffeine you're having, what type of exercise you're doing at different times of the day. So really working that out for yourself personally, you know, what works for you.
Well, I've just recently found somatic meditation, and I'm not sure whether you know much about this, but it's meditation that involves moving your body. So it could be gentle stretching, you know, gentle neck movements, everything you can do either on the bed or beside the bed. But I find that rather than sitting there meditating, it's nice to move my body before bed and really kind of shake off the day.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, it's finding what works for you. A lot of people don't like the idea of meditating because it's the sitting still, and they really struggle to quieten their mind for that. So yeah,
I think, you know, became interested in it. Not that, you know, obviously we all think, oh, we have to be quiet in our heads for meditation. It's not that at all. We just need to kind of let the thoughts go, like, you know, passing clouds we all hear. But I really liked it because I felt that mind and body connection.
Yeah.
You know, that going on.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, a lot of people love the swimming. It's up and down, following that black line on the bottom of the pool. You know, that can be quite meditative as well.
And easing you into a relaxed state. You know, calming your nervous system down, ready for a peaceful sleep. I know it sounds, probably some listeners are listening now going, but I have always had trouble sleeping. I spoke to one lady a couple of weeks ago at a gala I was at, and she said she's just resigned herself now that she just survives on 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night. So she said she's done everything, you know, everything she possibly could. But she's recently lost a lot of weight, and she said that has helped, and looking more at her food that came up, you know, looking at what she was eating.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, everything is linked. It's, you know, it's like when people sort of say to me in an exercise class, you know, how can I lose that bit of fat around my belly or that little bit at the back of the arm? You can't spot reduce. And the same way, you know, we can't just sort of fix, if you're looking at sleep, but so many things affect it. Like I said, you know, it's your mindset, it's your diet, it's your movement, your weight. And weight can have a big impact.
So I've read and heard and things like, try not to eat too close to your bedtime.
Yeah, so they do recommend, about 3 hours before bedtime to stop eating. And there are a number of reasons for that. One of them is digestion creates heat in the body because it's an active process that your stomach's digesting this food. And if you're struggling with hot flushes, you don't want to be adding extra heat into your system at that time. So that's one of the reasons. And the other just to give your body a chance to digest the food and then use those nutrients. And that's why we sort of have that overnight fast. I mean, breakfast is break fast. It's about having that fasting overnight. So that's when your body does its it's repairing and it's recovery, and it's really important to have that break overnight. So yeah, and just allowing your body to digest before you, like, I think most of us know, if you lie down on a full tummy, it's not the most comfortable.
It's not comfortable.
Experience.
No. And I do think as we get older, we do start to suffer more with our digestive problems, acid reflux, indigestion.
Yes, but that is also often, again, caused by stress. You know, stress can have a huge impact there. And looking at what we're eating as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But just being aware. And a lot of it comes to that awareness of your body. You know, what am I putting into my body? What's working for me? What isn't working? And, you know, often I think we sort of, we get on this treadmill and we just go because we have to do the work, do the kids, do the meal, do the things. Yeah. And we very rarely stop and reflect unless something breaks, you know, in our systems and we kind of go, oh, okay. So taking that time to stop and reflect and go, what is actually working for me? What's serving me well and what isn't? And having that kind of discussion with yourself and thinking about what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then you can often notice, because we can develop food sensitivities. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so, and that affects digestion.
What made you, Anya, you were a fitness instructor for 17 years and still are. Well, what made you look into the menopause? Was it you having more clients who were coming to you more?
No, it was me discovering that the intense heat in my back was not coming from exercise.
So your own symptoms. Yeah.
Yeah. I very clearly remember standing there one day going, oh, I think that's a hot flush. Because it was weird. My back would get really, really hot. And that's not normally something like when you're exercising and I'm used to getting hot and sweaty.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't normally just my back. And I sort of went, oh, is that what's going on? And my mum passed away many years ago, so I didn't get a chance to ask her any information. And I was, I don't know, maybe 46 or so. So really hadn't entered my mind what was going on.
Yeah, because we're told that you won't maybe go through the menopause till you're 50, 51.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's why I think so many women are confused, because we can experience these symptoms sooner.
Well, and the thing is, menopause it's a moment in time. It's 12 months after your last period. Mm-hmm. That's the menopause. But it's the lead up. It's the perimenopause. Yeah. That's when the hormones are doing this wild roller coaster up and down and all about. It's like it's puberty at the other end of life. Well, not the end of life, but, you know, it's later in life. It's the flip side of puberty. So your hormones are going up and down, and that it's the lead up to menopause, that perimenopause. That's when we're struggling with symptoms. But we're not thinking about it because, I mean, one of the most common things I hear from women is, oh, yeah, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, but yeah, I'm not there yet. I was like, oh.
I think we think we're still having periods, then we're still okay.
Yeah.
You know, but and I know for myself, and I think I've told this before, but, you know, I started to develop really bad acne, and I've never really suffered with bad skin in my life. So almost like going back to a teenager, you know, and also crying at really silly things. You just getting upset at the drop of a hat. And I'd sit there and think, why am I crying? What's going on? You know, is it really on a scale of 1 to 10? That's definitely to do with my hormones, isn't it?
Yeah. And you think about, you know, if anyone's been pregnant, you know, many women have, again, that hormonal roller coaster. You'll often be in tears for no reason. And, you know, so our hormones affect everything in our bodies. And we talk about puberty, we talk about pregnancy, but there's this, or there has been at least, it is changing, but there's been this lack of knowledge around menopause. And so many women think that, particularly when it comes to things like brain fog and you're forgetting words mid-sentence. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women really start to panic that they've got some kind of, you know, Alzheimer's or some other kind of dreadful disease. And it's perfectly normal and it does go away again. But yeah, it's that, and perimenopause can last 8-10 years in some cases. So if we know better, if we talk about these things and women can understand that, okay, it's, you know, this is normal. Hot flushes might not be great, but there are things you can do. If you can find a good doctor to speak to, then you can actually make better choices for yourself And I think that's why I say menopause champion. I'm really championing that time of life. I'm the other side of menopause now, and I've got this newfound confidence and, you know.
So Anya, it's not all doom and gloom. You do actually bounce back with more vitality than perhaps ever before.
You know what? Maybe not everybody, but I definitely feel, you know, I'm loving this stage of my life now. And look, I'm getting a lot of job satisfaction as well from helping women understand what they go through, helping businesses become menopause friendly. I just think there's that feel good factor as well that, you know, you sort of doing good, I guess, or helping people choose better for themselves. So that's really nice. But it's quite funny having a job where your age is actually quite relevant, or your older age is quite relevant and your experience. So,
especially nowadays when we've had so much about age discrimination. I even feel that as like being a therapist as well. The older I am, I feel the more respected you are, the wiser that you are perceived. It's all about the perception rather than the reality. Yeah. When you experience
I was going to say that, you know, looking up to the older generations and acknowledging them for that knowledge and experience is a powerful one as well for helping women feel more seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at news anchors, you know, often the older men are still reading the news, but the older women are sort of pushed aside for younger models, and, you know, it might be a bit of a cliche, but it often happens.
Yeah.
So if we can recognize women for that knowledge and experience, it goes a long way to making them feel valuable. We still have a lot to add.
And also the way, you know, perhaps my mom, her generation, they and my aunties, and they all went silently through the menopause and perimenopause. There was no conversation.
No, it was very hush-hush, and there was this real sort of almost shame around it, which is, I mean, it's perfectly natural. Half the population goes through it.
Yeah.
So it's good that it's changing. I think it's...
When you realized you were having a hot flush at 46, what were the things that you did, Anya? Of course, you with being in the industry, some point, you know, with around fitness and around women, what did you do? Because I think perhaps some of us think, okay, let's go and get HRT straight away.
Yeah. There's definitely a place for the medication, and it's great that these days there are so many different options around, you know, from patches to gels to creams and pills. So, you know, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not going to talk to that too much, except that if you find the right doctor who can help you, that's great. But
and it is about
really
finding the right doctor, isn't it? Because I do know so many women who say they go to the doctor, it happened to me, go to your doctor, and the doctor can be dismissive. So a lot of women I know have gone private because they could afford to pay for it. The ones who couldn't, grinned and burred it, to be honest. So go and have that conversation with your doctor. Listen to conversations like this. Do your research.
And that's key. Do your research. Know what questions to ask. Know what to ask for. You know, doing a blood test for hormone levels is a bit pointless because your hormone levels change almost daily.
Right.
You know, I said we're on that roller coaster. So that doesn't actually tell us an awful lot, but getting things like your iron levels checked, your vitamin D, your vitamin B, your zinc levels, all those vitamins and minerals, that can actually have a huge impact as well on your energy levels. So if you're low on the B vitamins, that can really impact your energy levels. So, or if you're anemic or, you know, just low in iron, again, that affects your energy level.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be something different. It, you know, it could be menopause. It could be linked together. But know what you want to ask your doctor and really stick to your guns, because you're the expert in your body.
Yeah.
You're the expert in your body. You know if something's not normal. And that's the thing. It's recognizing what's not normal and push until you get the answer, until you get the help. And I think a lot of women, you know, sort of go, oh, well, the doctor knows best. And, you know, they're really bright, but no doctor can know absolutely everything. Yeah. So, you know,
I will be putting some links actually in the show notes below this for women, for if they want to go to the doctor with this information. I have a checklist. I have also, you know, questions what to ask your doctor. So they'll all be going into the show notes so that women can access it. Now,
that can really help with brain fog as well when you're sitting there and you've forgotten what you want to ask.
Well, exactly. Yeah, take a checklist with you. Be prepared is the motto. Now, I'm really intrigued with your work around the workplace. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I'm working with Menopause Friendly Australia, which is actually the sister organisation of Menopause Friendly in the UK.
Yeah, which is interesting, isn't it? Because it's not just Australia-based. We're not just talking about Australia. There's actually this organisation here in the UK.
Menopause Friendly is a UK business. They've just had their awards night this week. So celebrating businesses that are doing a great job in providing menopause support in the workplace. But our main thing is to becoming menopause friendly is about educating team leaders, managers, management, you know, that those top level people, how to have the conversations with their staff so that if a woman does come in and say, hey, I'm struggling, I'm really battling to remember things in a meeting, or I'm, you know, getting these dreadful hot flushes, whatever it is, if a woman's brave enough to come forward and have that conversation, we're educating the managers on how to, you know, talk to them, ask the question, what can we do to help have that understanding? From there, we also educate colleagues. So we have these colleague sessions. And again, it's just an awareness of what menopause is, what symptoms you can experience, and what you can do about that and where to go for help. And, you know,
why did you think this was necessary in the workplace? What was happening in the workplace?
Well, there's so many things. The retirement age is generally around 64 in Australia, but on average, women are retiring at 51, which is a lot of, you know, 13, 14 years early.
Yeah.
So there's loss of income, there's loss of superannuation, you know, there's a whole bunch of factors. So that plays into the gender pay gap, plays into discrimination, but also women aren't necessarily wanting to leave the workforce. They're just not coping. Mm-hmm. And if we can just get through the menopausal phase, if they can have some support from their workplace, be it flexible work hours, you know, sort of say, right, I'm feeling dreadful today, I'm going to work from home. It might be a USB fan on your desk. It might be considering uniform policies if it's a business that has uniforms. Any of these things, you know, if you feel supported, I think most of us know, if we feel like we're getting support from a workplace or a family, you know, we feel better already.
Yeah.
So helping women get through that phase, but also talking to the men in the business.
Well, I was just going to say, I did, when I introduced the women's collection, I did mention that it's just as much for men as it is for women. You know, if you work with a woman, you live with a woman, your daughter is a woman, you know, whoever it may be, we need to have, we'll go back to the beginning, that knowledge. And it's important for men to have the understanding and be able to have a conversation around it without being embarrassed.
Yeah. And so many men will say, oh, I understand what my wife or partner is going through now.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's just, and men might turn up at work absolutely exhausted because they're sleeping next to a woman who's having these hot flushes and is, you know, throwing the blankets off and then pulling them on again and turning the fans on. And, you know, it does affect everybody.
Yes.
It really does. So, and so I think that's the thing. A lot of people sort of think, you know, is this going to be something else that women can be discriminated against for? But I think it's actually the opposite. If we can explain and have that understanding, then we can kind of go, okay, well, yes, she's menopausal. That's just a life stage, but she's a really valuable resource to the team, to the business. You know, it costs a lot more to recruit and train up a new person, particularly when you're looking at women in their, let's say, mid-40s to mid-50s, roughly.
Yeah.
They're often at the peak of their career. They've got a lot of experience. They've got a lot of knowledge.
Definitely.
It's them. They're a valuable asset to the workforce.
And for that woman to believe that too, you know, that she is valuable, that she is worth the
confidence
time and
is
support.
A huge thing.
Yeah. Because, of course, once with our hormones being all over the place, our mind can play tricks and we can become within ourselves. What's wrong with me? I can't remember this. I'm not doing this well enough. And it's the inner critic sitting there always, constantly.
Yeah.
And it's about recognizing why this is happening and what we can do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's good. You know, it's fairly new here in Australia still, but there's definitely some interest.
Have you seen any impact in the workplace, the ones that you've worked alongside, you know, currently?
Everyone's still starting. I mean, when I say new, we literally opened our membership in August. So right. It's still early days.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, definitely a lot of interest there. And we've got, you know, members stepping up and joining in, and, you know, parliaments, different state governments are starting to join as well and have the conversation. So it's definitely involved, evolving. But the women I work with on a more individual basis, the change there is quite dramatic. I mean, just today we were again talking about brain fog and the workplace and just having little tips and tricks of, you know, how to get through that day at work when, if you know you're going to forget things, just writing things down and go, oh, I'm just going to take notes in this meeting or maybe repeating back. So just so I check that I've got this right, you know, this is what I've written down. And you then actually look really efficient, but you know you're going to remember things as well. And a couple of women who left work at 50 have said, oh, I wish I didn't have the words to express what I was going through at the time. I wish I'd known this, you know, so it's, yeah. Again, when we know better, we can make better choices for ourselves and we can do better for ourselves.
Yeah, most definitely. I think here in the UK, it's definitely becoming more prominent of menopause managers or designated menopause kind of, you know, workers in the workplace.
Yep.
In schools. Yes. I know that a lot of, you know, coaches are now going into schools, doing workshops with staff. Even, you know, speaking to the staff about how also it can even go into the curriculum, teaching our, you know, teenagers who may have parents going on in the home and, you know, perhaps arming them for later life as well. Because guess prevention is key, and to know even the right things to eat as a lifestyle or the right ways to exercise as a lifestyle can only make the journey easier.
Oh, look, I think lifestyle is key. And I really take a lifestyle approach because that's, you know, with my personal training background, it all kind of ties in. But also remembering, you know, if our lifespan is, let's say early 80s, it's kind of a general lifespan. If you're going through menopause at 51, if that's, you know, when your period stops, that's 30 years of life.
Yeah.
That's a long time still to live. And what we do now, the way we eat and move and think and manage our stress, all impact that future life. And when we stop and consider that, because I think a lot of women sort of think menopause and not much beyond that.
Yeah, there is, isn't it? It's like it's doom and gloom and I'm going to be done at 55. What's left for me then? And maybe it's changing that thinking, that thought process, that there is a lot of life left in you beyond.
Yeah.
When you're working with a client, what kind of, you know, work do you do in preparation for that? Or what goals would you be setting with the client?
Well, it's really about sitting down and taking that time, like I said before, you know, really stopping and taking a moment to assess where you're at. Where do you want to go? What do you want your future to look like? Mm-hmm. Do you want to travel? Do you want to be able to travel? Well, then you've got to be healthy enough. You've got to be mobile and, you know, fairly fit and agile, and all these things, you know, play into it. So if that's what your future wants to, the future you is doing, what is your you now doing? You know, what are we doing now to make sure that you can do that in the future? You know, other things aside, you know, you can't control, I don't know, illnesses and accidents, you know, things like that. But generally, if the better we do now, the better we're going to be then. So, you know, having that long-term goal, think about what it is you want your future to look like. Have a really clear, detailed vision. You know, create a vision board if you're a really visual person.
I love a vision.
Because that's your real reminder every day. That's what I'm working towards. And then starting to break it down into smaller steps. And it ultimately, it comes down to every single decision that you make during the day. You know, in the morning, do I get up and go and do some exercise or do I stay in bed? Well, if I get up and do my exercise, it might take me a step closer to my goal. If I stay in bed, it's going to take me a step away from my goal. So each little decision during the day then becomes, you know, towards or away from your goal. and just really breaking it down. But having that clear vision is the start.
And making those small changes then become normal as long as you just keep on with them. It's that idea, yeah. Isn't it, that, you know, even if you just did 5 minutes a day at the end of the week, that's added up rather than doing nothing at all. And then you're changing, yeah. You're changing your thinking patterns, you're changing your yeah. brain patterns. So then these habits become habits, you know, sorry, these things yeah. become a habit. And then it really is about making your life as good as it can be now, but also for later. And you said before about we can't control things that happen around us externally, our environment. We can control and manage ourselves. And perhaps if we do that now, then even though we can't control those external things, perhaps we can manage them better.
I think so, definitely. Mm. And a lot of what's going on internally is that little voice that you were talking about and managing that.
Mm.
And, you know, not, what did someone say? I heard a great word yesterday was don't awfulize.
Awfulize.
Like catastrophizing. Awfulize. You know, it's changing the way we think about yeah. things as well. So yeah. menopause, for example, you can go, oh, it's another thing we have to deal yeah. with. And honestly, some women really do suffer.
Yeah,
I was fairly lucky. I had a relatively easy time of it, except my family that I used to get really cranky at. But some women really, really do suffer. But, you know, sometimes just changing the way we think and go, okay, I've got to go through this. Every
There's
woman
an
goes through it.
Process, isn't there?
Yep. Mm. There'll be an end point to this, and just sort of accepting the situation, accepting where you're at now, and being kind to yourself.
Mm.
That has a huge impact. And again, it affects your stress levels, which affects your cortisol, which affects, you know, it again, it's all linked. But yeah, going back to the small steps, the small changes, I'd actually far rather somebody make small changes, because you're far more likely to stick to a little change. So you do, like, you know, this week or this month, I'm going to, you know, start going to bed 5 or 10 minutes earlier every night. So you gradually add that, or I'm going to meditate before I go to bed, or I'm going to add an extra vegetable to each meal just to start increasing my vegetable. Whatever it is, whatever small change it is, do that consistently. And then once that's embedded, then you go and add the next one. You think, okay, well, I need to drink a bit more water during the day, or whatever it is. But doing the small changes, I actually get a little bit nervous when people want to do all the things. They go, I do this and this and this, because inevitably we fail at some stage, and then we kind of go, oh, you know, too
hard.
And
that's what I've learned.
Everything up.
I've learned from the past, and when I'm working with clients, I say the same as what you're saying. You know, I used to say, right, okay, I'll do this and I'll do this and I'll do this. Before I knew it, I was overwhelmed and then wouldn't do any of it at all.
Yep.
So
yep,
one thing I'm taking away from this conversation, Anya, is I am going to turn my phone off an hour before bed. And I know when that time is, it's 9 p.m. and I am going to put it to one side, maybe in a drawer or something, just not touch it. And that's one thing that I'm taking away today to give myself that break. I think also not just the blue light, the mental break.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all consuming, aren't they, those phones? They're designed to draw us in. It's not even, you know, don't feel bad. Like, well, anyone listening to this, don't feel bad that you're addicted and keep getting drawn to it. They're designed to do that.
And that's a whole other conversation, our phone use, particularly as a small business owner, particularly when you're on social media, particularly when you're trying to help others and you want to get your message out there. It can be very time consuming, but I think if I can give myself that 9 p.m. close off, then that will help me tremendously. But I need to be consistent and I need to be disciplined.
Set yourself a little alarm that goes off.
Yeah, I will. So Anya, we said about making the small changes. I know that you have the wellbeing toolkit. You know, what makes up your wellbeing toolkit for the listeners? What are the things that you would put in there as a takeaway today?
I have to say exercise, because
yes,
you know,
but it is important, and that can be walking, Is that just, is that a brisk walk, 30 minutes?
It's
would you recommend a day?
It's moving. Yeah.
I like a dance moving. In the kitchen. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know, starting with things like that. Look, ultimately, ideally for in exercise, we're doing some cardiovascular, some of that huff and puff, get out of breath exercise, because that's good for our heart. You know, we ideally be doing some strength work because that's really important for your bone density and your muscle mass, because those are both key as we get older. And if you want to do the things afterwards, and then we want to be trying to do some flexibility and maybe some mindfulness exercise as well, a bit more the yoga, Pilates, bar type of things. But start off with just something.
Yeah.
You know, if you're sitting at your desk all day, once an hour, get up, you know, do some high knees, get your knees up on the spot, or do some push-ups against the kitchen bench while you're waiting for the kettle to boil. Have a dance, you know, put on some good music. Start small, but start to incorporate that movement into the day. You know, your posture will improve. You'll stand a bit taller. You know, you put your head in a bit, ease the neck strain, things like that. I'll carry on forever about exercise. I'll have to stop. So exercise is
we've definitely got exercise down. Although I just want to say that I used to have a therapist who, she was well in her 70s, and she used to, well, she told me that she'd squat while brushing her teeth. I thought, good on her. So
and that's the habit stacking, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, the habit stacking.
Yes. Yeah, being kind to yourself is one thing as well. So find some time to do something for yourself. And sometimes it's a good idea to have a list of things that you enjoy doing. And it can be a 5-minute break. Like, you know, if the sun's shining, go and sit outside with a cup of tea or whatever it is. Just go in and enjoy the outdoors if that fills your cup. And then have some longer ones as well. And then have some really long ones. It's something that you might do on the weekend or on holiday, you know, those longer activities. But having a list of things that fills your cup, that just regenerates you. Sometimes it's sitting and taking a few deep breaths. But making that time for yourself, it brings your cortisol levels down. It makes you feel better. You can function better. And you're better then for everybody else as well. So the, you know, that mindfulness, being kind to yourself is key. Diet is a big one. Most people don't eat, I know in Australia definitely the stats are really high that they don't eat enough vegetables. So if we can start to increase our vegetable intake.
We've had a nutritionist on, and the idea of plenty of fruits, plenty of vegetables, salads. It's coming, it's winter here for us now. So maybe lots of nice soups and casseroles. We get your protein in, get your good fats in, and your healthy, you know, your good carbs, your good grains.
Yeah. And look, the one that comes up here again and again is the Mediterranean diet.
Here, same.
Because it's a really good variety of fruits and vegetables that really nourishes your gut. And nuts, seeds, whole grains, a little bit of red meat, lots of fish. You know, just that really good variety. It's a bit of everything, you know. Then we say, you know, try and have food that looks like it did when it was harvested. So avoiding the processed things, going for as fresh and as real as possible. It's going to be more satisfying. It's going to be more filling, and it's just generally better.
Better food for us. One guest said, food that your granny would eat, you know, food that she wouldn't turn her nose up to. Yeah, and recognize. And I also love, you know, if you pick up a tin or a packet of food and you look at the ingredients list, if it's really long and you do not recognize, I'd say 3/4 of that, you know that it's not going to be nourishing for you. And I know myself, once if I feel nourished, I feel good.
We do.
What you eat.
Definitely. Well, about 70% of our immune function comes from our gut. So if we fuel that gut bacteria, that microbiome that lives in our stomachs, you know, they don't need us to survive, but we need the bacteria and those microbes and everything to survive. And the more healthy and diverse that microbiome, the healthier we are. So
there's been so much attention towards foods that are good for your gut and the link between the gut and everything, really.
Your
brain connection, you know, other vital organs linked to your gut, your moods and emotions. It's almost like, you know, it's like your brain in the stomach. And I do have somebody coming on, an expert in the gut to talk about that.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Which well, you mentioned mood there. And I guess it ties in with energy as well. But, you know, when we're feeling down or we're feeling low in energy, we often reach for less ideal choices, shall we say, the food side of things.
We do.
And then inevitably, we actually don't feel much better. Energy doesn't get any higher. So we then do it again. Or we feel really bad for doing it. So, you know, we end up in this downward spiral.
We become in a cycle then, cycle of, you know, oh, well, I'm going to eat that, we call it stodgy, you know, bit of stodge because I'm really low on my energy. And I know if I'm reaching for that, I am tired. I am tired and worn out. And then afterwards, if I have eaten it or overeaten perhaps, I feel so guilty. I can't help it. It's those emotions that come with that. And then you feel bad. So, you're then got your inner critic there. Yeah. And I also think we should say that sometimes do that because you're being kind to yourself. If you want that piece of cake, then, you know, go for it. But there are reasons behind it and you're understanding why you're doing it and you're not going to, you know, tell yourself off afterwards.
Well, one thing I would say when it comes to those, whatever your soul food or whatever you want to call it is, whatever that is for you, it might be the cake or chocolate or
I love wine a piece of carrot cake.
Well, there you go. So when you go to have that cake, just stop and think, you know, do I really want this? And if the answer is yes, then sit and really enjoy it and savor it and make the most out of it. You'll get so much more satisfaction out of that piece of cake rather than sort of sometimes we end up, you know, thinking, well, I shouldn't have the cake, I'll have something else. And then we still end up having the cake anyway. So as you say, sometimes just have the cake, but really enjoy it.
But there's a lot of work at the moment. And with my clients, I've been working on mindful eating and mindful drinking. So rather than perhaps just scoffing it down, you know, enjoy every piece, enjoy the flavor, you know, take every sensation in. And then it's been a really enjoyable experience rather than one that's going to be fueled by guilt and disappointment and not even really.
And that's one of the things, you know, where they say step away from your desk to have your lunch and, you know, try and have a meal with your family, you know, in the mornings or the evenings, whenever you can have that time. So we have that whole social connection again, and you're taking the time to actually pay attention to your food rather than, you know, trying to work through and eating. Suddenly you look down and your plate's empty and you're like, where did that go? Mindful eating is really important as well.
So in our toolbox, we've got exercise. We have got self-care, kindness.
Self-care.
We have food, mindful eating, mindful drinking.
Yep. And then the other thing I would say is really looking out for your brain health as well. So, you know, taking little brain breaks, it kind of ties in a bit with the self-care and your stress management, but really looking after your brain because, you know, again, that's what's going to keep us going until the end of life. So
I think what you said as well earlier, go and get your bloods tested at the doctor's, not particularly maybe perhaps for your hormones, because as you said, they fluctuate, but for any vitamin deficiencies. And then rather than just perhaps going to, you know, the shop for the health and food shop for a multivitamin. Oh, this says it's good for perimenopause. This said it's good for menopause. Go and then get the vitamins that you know you need.
No, because otherwise you're just wasting your money on supplements.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's a food thing that can, you know, you can get those nutrients from food.
Yeah.
And we just have to make sure that we're eating, like zinc's a really key one, and the omega-3 fatty acids. So that, you know, that's coming from your fish and your something bit from the red meat and the dark green leafy vegetables. So again, coming back to the diet, that can really help that side of things as well. But yeah, your brain health, your muscle health, your bone health, you know, osteoporosis becomes a big issue. Heart disease increases as we get older. Once menopause, women go through menopause, our risk of heart attack and or heart disease rises up to that the same level as men. Before menopause, we have a really low risk of heart disease. And then it comes up with menopause.
So it's doubly important to start to put these practices in place. It sounds a lot right now, I think. It does sound quite a lot, but take a step back. Perhaps you've got these four areas of nutrition, exercise, yourself, your self-care.
Yeah.
And then within that, just look at what are the small things you can do today and just choose one.
I would actually start and have a look and go, maybe if you don't do anything for yourself, then start to sort of have a little mini break every day. Mm. Or if you're not exercising at all, then maybe focus, choose one area, like we said, with the small steps, choose one area that you feel would be most beneficial for you to start with, or choose the one that you're going to have the most success with to start.
Yeah. Give you the confidence.
Because then you have, you have some success, you notice the changes, you're feeling better. And once that's underway, then you can get onto the next area. Because yes, someone said this to me today. She goes, it all feels so overwhelming.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But just start with one area. And again, take that step back, assess where you're at right now. Are you doing the thing that you really want to be doing? Are you saying yes to too many things?
Mm.
You know, learning to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learning to say no and go, you know what? Actually, I have enough on my plate right now. I'm going to pass on this opportunity to volunteer at whatever it is. You know, I think those women who volunteer for everything will know who they are. And just, maybe that's the thing. Stop, sit down for a while on your own and work out where you're at now. What is your life looking at? What would you like to change? What do you want your future life to look like? And then work out those small steps along the way. Break it down. I think sometimes sitting down and writing things down clarifies things in our own heads, and then we can break it down and it removes some of the overwhelm, hopefully.
And talk to your female friends.
Oh, yes.
Or family. Yep. Talk amongst yourselves and perhaps ask the questions. Is this what you're going through, or what changes have you made, if any? Have that conversation, because some of your resources are right in front of you.
And that's the thing. You never know who's tried something that might just work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, you might help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But also recognizing who your supporters are. Because let's say you want to cut back on your alcohol consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us have someone in our lives who will go, oh, just have one.
Mm-hmm.
So recognizing who your supporters are, so that when you're really trying to implement that change, let them know, because then they'll support you and go, hey, I got you a soft drink or a glass of water or a mocktail, whatever it is.
And the same with food as well, really.
Yeah. Whatever it is you're trying to change.
Be vocal about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then when you know who those people are who are going to try and derail you, prepare yourself mentally and go, okay, I'm going out tonight for dinner with friends. I don't want to drink, and I know, Susie is always going to try and, encourage me to have a drink with her. So have those reasons ready in your head to sort of defend yourself from that. Be prepared, really.
Mm-hmm.
But telling people what you are trying to achieve is really powerful as well.
Yeah, I support that too. You've got to be...
Social connection is big. It's a big part of longevity and long-term health is social connection and engagement.
Well,
it's been proven.
They do say that, I think the second cause, of death in old age, the second highest cause of death in old age is loneliness.
Yeah.
Not having that social connection.
Mm-hmm. So it's just finding, whether it's at work or volunteering or community. Yeah.
But then maybe also, I know that there's a variety of groups around. I know there's menopause cafes online for women and men that they can get involved with. Going back to what we said earlier, do your research. Mm. I know when I'm working with women and the menopause, we've looked at the Louise Newsome Balance app website. I know that you worked with a lady called Jenny Burrell.
Yes.
Yeah. I've had a little look there. She's got a lot of information online. There's Positive Pause online, lots of menopause websites there that are all free and can give you great tips and strategies. And of course, Anya, I'll put all your links in the show notes. And if anybody wants to get in touch with yourself or see what you're up to, then they can get in touch with you.
Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
Well, Anya, thank you so much for that today. Absolutely fascinating. lots of information and some great tips.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. I could carry on for a long time about all of those things. But yeah, I think the thing is just really break it down and start small.
And I love, let's end with, you've still got another 30 years in you after menopause.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of living left to do.
Let's get it right now. And we've got all that life to look forward to.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.
Pleasure. Thank you, Anya.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Bouncing Back Stronger. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you found inspiration and valuable insights to help you bounce back stronger in your own life. I'd love to hear from you, so please feel free to share your thoughts, insights, or personal stories of resilience by reaching out to me via email or my social media channels in the show notes. I'll leave you with this. Resilience is a journey, and we're in this together. Farewell for now, Bouncer Backers, and I look forward to seeing you all next week for more like this.